Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello and welcome. Welcome to Back Chat. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry and we are here to talk about everything movement and scoliosis. And today, actually, our topic is a little bit more specific. So we're going to be talking about pregnancy and postpartum care as well. And I've got a lovely guest today. Her name is Laura Glazebrook, and she is a scoliosis pregnancy specialist. She is a physiotherapist and she's a Schroth expert as well. So she's going to tell us everything that she knows, hopefully, or maybe give us a little bit of something that she knows, at least. We only have a little bit of time with her. But it is a topic, I think, that is definitely very, very interesting, and not just when you're maybe right in it and you're thinking of getting pregnant, but I think the whole kind of postnatal period, definitely for me, it's been a while since I was pregnant. But I think it's still relevant, even if it's, for me, it's been 10 years now. Definitely a very, very relevant topic, especially if we're thinking about everything to do with pelvic floor. So let's get her on. There she is. Hi, Laura.
Hello, Christine. Hi, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just before we get started, tell us where you are at the moment.
Okay. Well, see, I was going to say good morning, but I realized that where I am, it is morning. Where you are, Christine, it is afternoon. So hello. I am in the United States. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I am just sitting here at home, excited to talk to everyone.
Lovely. Yes, absolutely. Oh, well, for us, it's getting dark now. You can't see it. Yes. But yes, it's evening, really. Yes. Getting towards the end of the day. But this is the nice thing, right, about this medium, right, that we can talk to people from all over the world.
Absolutely.
Good. So, Laura, tell us a little bit about how you got into this work, because it's very specific, right? It's a very, I mean, I thought my topic was very niche, but I think yours is even more niche. So tell us how you got into it.
Yeah, I think I have worked out that for my career, I kind of decided to train in the way that I would have needed myself for when I was younger. So I have scoliosis myself. I have a severe scoliosis. So my story actually started when I was a child. I had been diagnosed with scoliosis, it was early onset. So it was before the age of 10. The pediatrician told my parents to just watch. This was the 90s, so a while ago. And to my knowledge, I didn't even really get sent to an orthopedist until I was about 10, at which point the curve had gotten pretty significant. And essentially, I had gone to, I think, one or two orthopedic surgeon visits. And by the time I had, you know, the 6-month follow-up, they had determined my curve had gotten too big. Bracing was no longer an option for me, and I needed to have spinal fusion. My curve was 57 degrees before they operated. And due to just several factors, they weren't able to get as good of correction for me. So they got me down to about 35 degrees, but I do have a full fusion from, I believe it's about T4 to L2. And so at that time, I was getting a little bit of physiotherapy at the hospital just to get off, you know, get out of bed and get back on your feet and get up and down the stairs. And so at that time, I decided, you know, PT could be a good career for someone like me. I thought it was interesting. So at that time, I decided that that might be something to look into. So fast forward, I was at university for my undergraduate, and I had a major of health and exercise science. And I did end up deciding to study to become a physical therapist. So here in the States, it is a clinical doctorate. So it's a 3-year program after undergraduate. And I actually, once I graduated, I spent the first couple of years of my career, I honestly didn't even really know that scoliosis therapy was an option for me. But I worked in different environments. And when I got pregnant, I needed some pelvic floor PT because I was having some pelvic girdle pain. And I had done a little bit of research in PT school on the topic, and I thought this might be a good thing for me to do next. So after my mind was blown with all the things pelvic floor, I decided to specialize in pelvic floor. So I did that, and it's been probably about 7 years at this point that I've been, I got some advanced certifications in pelvic floor training. And then after my second daughter, actually, I found a local PT who did the scoliosis exercise or Schroth or PSSE, whatever you would like to call it. And she recruited me and she said she needed another therapist. So she sponsored me to get training for scoliosis exercise. And so now I do have sort of this very niche expertise of both the pelvic floor knowledge and the scoliosis knowledge, plus the fact that I've had 2 pregnancies and deliveries with a spinal fusion. So I do have quite, I would say that probably does make me an expert in that, in all
yes.
the ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can definitely, you can safely claim that. Yeah. How old were you when you got your fusion?
I was 11.
Oh, you were very young. Okay,
I was
so
very
you diagnosed
young.
At 10 and then you already had it.
Yes. And 11. So actually the 27th anniversary of that was yesterday. So my scoliosis spinal fusion anniversary was yesterday.
Yeah. So you're an expert in living with spinal fusion pretty much your whole life as well.
Yes. So much
Which
so
is,
that I forgot that I had
it. It's fairly unusual, isn't it? I mean, most people seem to be getting it like in late teenage years, I think.
Yeah, I do think that now, I mean, at least here where I live in the Atlanta area, I think they're more cognizant of screening and trying to get ahead of it early. So where I am, there's a lot more focus on bracing. But I think in general, they do try to wait. I think in my mm-hmm. case, the curve had already gotten so big. I think there was no ability to wait. But yeah. there is, you know, I do feel like in certain parts of the country, that is still that's still the only option they have is the fusion surgery. And some people aren't screening, so they don't catch it until it's a lot more progressed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So then we fast forward a little bit, obviously. You've obviously kind of been living with your spinal fusion and learning more, which is amazing, obviously, with your education, with your physical therapy training. Now, when you then kind of got pregnant and we're going through all these changes, or maybe even before, was there ever kind of any thoughts about is the fusion going to affect pregnancy or is scoliosis going to affect it in any way?
I think in my case, I don't know if it was helpful or not, but I kind of joke that because I had my fusion so young, I sort of forgot that I had it.
Right.
if that makes sense. Yeah. I went snowboarding and I thought, why is this so hard? And it took me years to think, oh, it's because my trunk doesn't like twist like everybody else's. So the one thing, and I knew I wanted children, my orthopedic surgeon did not say anything about pregnancy, which honestly I think is good because now mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are hearing that pregnancy might be hard. And I think that's all honestly setting people up for a little bit of trouble, or it could, because at the second you introduce any fear, it can be more of a problem than what could actually happen. For me, the one thing that I knew, or the one thing that I had learned just through my training and my own kind of research, was the epidural. Like probably I would not be able to get an epidural because of the spinal fusion and because of the torsion in my spine. Mm-hmm. So when I had my first son, I had actually consulted with an anesthesiologist ahead of time just to get a consult and see, is there any way I could get an epidural? And basically they said no. They looked at my back, they looked at my x-ray, and they're like, we don't think it's safe, which I appreciated. And so I decided to go for a more natural birth. I trained myself in hypnobirthing techniques. Mm-hmm. I labored, you know, naturally for quite some time, knowing that I wouldn't be able to get an epidural. But I never thought that even though I had a scoliosis and a spinal fusion, I never thought that that would be an issue that would prevent me from getting pregnant or being able to deliver.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So birth was, you know, both times natural birth? And
I did end up with a C-section for my son. And yeah. I think that was primarily because, he's a very large baby. And mm-hmm. I labored for about 27 hours, really, if we want to be technical. And he wasn't coming. So I did end up with a C-section. And honestly, because of the nature of my first pregnancy and knowing that I have big babies, I elected for a second C-section. Right. I did go back and forth whether I wanted to do a trial of natural or vaginal delivery. And I also did not want to be in the situation where I labored again for over a day and then still ended up with a C-section. So that's the way that I went.
Yeah, absolutely. But it wasn't necessarily fusion related.
No, it was not fusion related.
Yeah.
It was the circumstances of the first delivery, and plus compounded by the fact that I think I went into the hospital a little bit early, and, you know, I had this cascade of medical interventions where my labor sort of stalled. So yeah. I don't believe it had anything to do with my spine or the fusion. I think it was just a combination of other things that led to that C-section.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I just want to acknowledge some people here who are joining us live here as well. I am seeing your questions. So Laura, for example, is asking the reason why you couldn't receive an epidural. And I'm going to get your opinion first.
Okay, well, this is one of the most common questions that I get. I get it on Instagram all the time. I get it to my emails. I get this question a lot. I will preface this by saying I am not an anesthesiologist. I'm a physical therapist. And so my knowledge is based on all of that and based on my personal experience. I actually wrote an entire blog about it, which I'm happy to provide the link to that, where I speak in detail to all the nuance. In short, the anesthesiologist, there is a very specific spot in the spine where they inject that needle. It is a very long needle, mm-hmm. and the placement is really important. Mm-hmm. And if they don't know exactly where that needle is going, they can cause injury to the spinal cord. They can cause injury to the nerve roots, or there's risks. There's inherent risks. I've heard of women with scoliosis and fusion and without that have had injuries from an epidural, such as they get a really severe spinal headache the day after they deliver. And it's because yeah. of just the fact that there's this really large needle that they're injecting. Yeah. And I just, as a professional, I understand that people have their tolerance of risk. And so if a specific anesthesiologist does not feel comfortable placing that epidural needle and that they can do it safely, that they can see anatomically where somebody needs to be injected, I can definitely understand the hesitation. I would not want somebody to feel uncomfortable or unsafe with any treatment method.
Yeah.
And so usually when I'm working, because I do pregnancy coaching, mm-hmm. also monthly pregnancy coaching, and I just tell people that I say do the same thing that I did, where they need to consult with a specialist, bring their x-ray, have that conversation. And if they have just a thoracic scoliosis and no lumbar curve, or if they have a minor lumbar curve, that is kind of up to the individual anesthesiologist, but it is well within their right they don't feel safe or they don't feel comfortable, they will refuse. And so it's just important to know that ahead of time, because I think a lot of people, at least here in the States, they tend to hang their hat on, oh, well, I'll be able to get an epidural during my delivery. But that's not necessarily the case. And you want to be prepared ahead of time, or at least know if it's an option or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And I did the same thing. I did get it checked out before, just to see, obviously, what was going on, because you just don't know, right? Especially if this is your first baby. It's better to get this checked out before. Good. So obviously you work with people that have fusions, but also people that don't have fusion. And I think one of the certainly I can tell you from my perspective, one of the things, and I did have a miscarriage before my first child. There was a little bit of an element of, can my body actually do this? It might be kind of an irrational fear, but it was something like, it's obviously given me this curvature, it's given me this scoliosis. Does this mean that something is wrong with me that might mean that the baby will be at some point at risk? Because you can things are not symmetrical and things are maybe not as they are maybe in a kind of an average person. So what kind of, and I'm sure you hear this from women as well. What would you say to that?
Well, first of all, I'm so sorry for your pregnancy loss. That is hard for everyone. I've looked into this a lot. I looked into it a little bit on my own before my pregnancies. Because of what I do and my specialization, I've talked with multiple women about this. And structurally, the scoliosis does not pose any risk. It's a torsion within the spine, but for the vast majority of people, there is no issue at all. It's just a structural curvature. And unless there is some underlying component, there is not really a need to be concerned. I think it's also important to know that, every pregnancy, there is an inherent risk of miscarriage or pregnancy loss. And that's for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's genetically there's an issue or there's some kind of incompatibility that's happening. And that is present for everyone, even without scoliosis and spinal fusion. And I think that sometimes, because I have heard that before, and it's important to remember that that is inherently something that can happen during a pregnancy. Pregnancy is, it's a challenge to the mother. It's a challenge. They say it's like not a health neutral event. When we have a scoliosis, it is a structural curvature of the spine, but as long as all of the anatomy is there, as long as we have the uterus, we have the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, structurally and anatomically, there's no issue. There's no risk of someone's pregnancy because they have a scoliosis or because they have a spinal fusion. Yeah. I've worked with women with very severe curvatures, including severe lumbar curvatures, that have had no issue carrying a child, even people with severe curvatures that don't even have pain during pregnancy. So I think the scoliosis or the fusion itself, I don't really believe is inherently dangerous to a pregnancy. Although I understand, because depending on your knowledge or depending on what maybe some medical professional has told you, I do think there is an increased fear for a lot of women with scoliosis and fusion. And like I said earlier, I think sometimes that even comes from the doctor when they're a youth, right? I've heard of girls coming into the office with their mother for scoliosis care. And one of their first questions for me is this going to impact her ability to get pregnant? Yeah. And so the second you put that little seed of doubt in someone's brain, I mean, pregnancy is a big unknown anyway, and it's a little bit daunting. So I think anytime you have anything else, I think it can become crippling. But I think it's important to know that there is no inherent challenge or risk to someone with scoliosis or fusion, that they should be able to get pregnant. they can get pregnant. They should be able to carry a pregnancy to term. I always remind people that even with scoliosis, that their spine is very stable. Their bodies are capable of this. And that's sometimes enough to help drown out that fear.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, after my first child, I definitely had a newfound respect for my body. And yeah, just in awe of, you know, what it can do, right? So it is quite amazing. The other thing, and I think that is always kind of coming up, is this idea of, obviously we know that there are some, that hormones can affect our spine and our bones, obviously, as well. So what about progression? What about the scoliosis getting worse? I mean, that would be probably more relevant to those that don't have a spine effusion. What about that?
That is a very great question. And there is very limited research on it. And some of that research has been mixed. I will say, I actually just recently did a different training on hormones and pregnancy. And it's actually turned out that for the vast majority of people, that that hormone, especially the influence of relaxin, is very overstated, meaning that there's not as much of a risk of people to be, there's not that much of a connective tissue increase in like laxity for the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to know. Now, there's a lot of different hormones that are interacting. And of course, I think our bodies are just in a state of constant change during a pregnancy. And one of the things that I like to tell everyone is a pregnancy is like a magnifying glass on all of your movement strategies. And so those of us with scoliosis, we don't necessarily like the way that we move through life. We sometimes, you know, we're using like compensations and we're maybe using a different movement pattern to make something happen because of various reasons. And so pregnancy is just a magnifying glass on that. So a lot of times if we're having, you know, pain or issues, which people might not at all during a pregnancy, but it's a lot of times due to that mechanical stress and not so much the hormones.
Okay.
When you look at the research, what I've seen in the most recent studies is there is a low risk of curve progression depending on your curve magnitude when you start. What I saw, there are some studies that say it was negligible, that really for the most part there was, if there was a slight increase, you know, right at, during delivery or afterwards, it resolved and went back to kind of baseline before. There's some that says that there is no risk of progression. There are some that say that there is more research needed. That's always what it says at the end of every research study, right? More research.
We need more research, yes.
Yeah. And I think there is a subset of women that have things like maybe connective tissue, like significant connective tissue disorder like Ehlers-Danlos or, you know, Marfan's, or people that might have a slight increased risk. Mm-hmm. Just because of the makeup of their bodies and because pregnancy is a stressor. But also I think that getting our bodies strong, you know, before, you know, ideally before pregnancy and during pregnancy, but then after pregnancy, it's the more we can keep our bodies strong and keep our muscles activated. I think that going back to moving with scoliosis, I think that's ultimately, it's the changes in our body if left untreated or if left unresolved that I think can cause the issue, whether that's pain or whether that's a slight progression or whether that's just, you know, life.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of kind of our movement practice, our whatever, yoga, our Pilates or going to the gym, is there, I mean, obviously we might be looking at pregnancy yoga classes, but in terms of our scoliosis, is there anything that we kind of need to keep in mind or the two together? Because that's when it becomes really complicated, right?
As I will speak for at least myself and a lot of the women that I work with, it is just in general, It is hard to prioritize our movement just in this Western culture, in this life. It's busy. I know for myself, I work full time. I have two children. I have a household to keep up. I have a marriage that I'm trying to prioritize. And so I think that sometimes finding some kind of purposeful, intentional movement is better than nothing.
Yeah.
So recently I was able to listen to Alessandra Negrini, who is part of the Italian Scoliosis School. And one of the research studies she highlighted is that basically any time we choose a purposeful movement, it's proven to be good for our scoliosis. I hear a lot of people ask me, is this good for scoliosis? Is this good for scoliosis? And I think where I land with that is the best exercise is the one that you'll do. I do feel like there are types of exercise that tend to be just the best from, stabilization. I love Pilates for scoliosis. I love core stabilization. I, of course, love scoliosis-specific exercise or PSSE. I personally feel like getting a good handle on understanding how to correct my own scoliosis was the main thing that helped me rehab myself after my second pregnancy. So I feel like in an ideal world, women would go into pregnancy or work with someone in pregnancy that does have somewhat of a knowledge of scoliosis. So the wonderful thing about our time now is they have access to specialists like you that can do virtual work, or I also work with people virtually, or people like, Beth from Strength and Spine. There's so many people out there that can do virtual work. And just to help people, A, have a really good understanding of their bodies and of scoliosis to start with, but B, also, I think, just to be empowered, because I think one of the worst things that can happen is people become almost paralyzed by fear of, I'm just not going to exercise because I'm afraid that it's going to hurt my back or that my back is going to get worse. And again, I think it's that fear that as our bodies get kind of weaker and weaker, that's what causes the progression. So it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I'm just always I say find a movement that feels good in your body, whether that's swimming, whether that's hiking, certainly somebody that has training in yoga and Pilates with scoliosis in mind, they're going to have a great leg up. Somebody that has access to scoliosis exercise, they're going to have a leg up. But it's the just keeping our bodies moving and just finding a way to keep our body strong.
Are there any kind of major principles that you tell your clients, okay, if you go to your general yoga class, which you've already been doing before your pregnancy, this is what I want you to do and this is what I don't want you to do. Are there kind of any I know a lot of them will be very specific, obviously, as well to the person, but are there any general ones that you can tell us?
Absolutely. I think, again, for me, it's I want to make sure that somebody feels empowered in their movement and that they feel confident in whatever they're doing. The general things that I tell people, especially if I'm able to work with them one-on-one, either virtually or in person in a clinic, I educate them about their scoliosis and their body's tendencies, because a lot of times, as you know, and probably a lot of people know, our bodies have these tendencies of shifting or, compensations that happen. And that's not inherently bad, but kind of knowing those ahead of time and knowing how to activate those muscles to lessen that. So for me, I would try to educate someone on looking for or knowing what it feels like when those compensations are happening, and then trying to use their core, try to elongate, try to hold their body in their best position before they go do that movement. Mm-hmm. So for somebody with yoga, I think a lot of yoga has a lot of twisting and rotating. And I don't fall in the camp. There are some people that say, rotation is bad for people with scoliosis. I feel like we have to be able to rotate, because in life, we need to be able to look out the window when we're driving in the car. We need to be able to twist and get something. But knowing how to kind of activate their muscles and keep their bodies in an elongated position when they're going into that movement. Mm-hmm. So just being aware of their specific body, how they can hold themselves into their best neutral position, and having that in mind.
And with kind of pregnancy specific, obviously, a lot of movements might be difficult anyway, the further you get into your pregnancy, right? So you'll probably start to automatically adapt as kind of common sense.
Yes. Actually, it's very interesting. I have found that there is a set of women, a subset that actually feels better when they are pregnant. I think it's because the baby sort of provides a little bit of stability to their, to their lower, lower spine, lower torso. Another thing that I think is an easy thing, I tell this to everyone, I say this on social media a lot, but there are really great ways during a pregnancy that we can use our core and our breathing strategies to really stabilize our spine and our trunk when we are moving. So for instance, like one example is if I try to tell people, and I don't know if this is something that you have heard of before, but our body is like a canister. So we have our diaphragm on top, we have our core muscles, and we have our pelvic floor, and they all sort of work together to create the stability. And so that we can get them to kind of contract together. And that helps us for like transitional movements. So a lot of times, you know, later in a pregnancy, just even rolling over in bed or getting out of bed or certain movements in a fitness class can be challenging or even painful because we have a lot of stress on our joints. So you could even practice this just sitting in your chair. Like think about when you take a big inhale, you're allow your belly to open, your diaphragm is kind of coming down, your abs are sort of coming out a little bit, and there's a little bit of movement downwards in your pelvic floor. And then when you exhale, your diaphragm comes up, that pelvic floor comes up a little bit, and those core muscles come in. So even just learning how to use that exhale to kind of engage that core and pelvic floor before you do a movement can really make a big difference for those women that are having a bit of a harder time or more pain, to be more successful, to stay active, whether that's yoga or Pilates or whatever it is they're trying to do, but to help them feel comfortable enough that they can continue to exercise and keep moving their muscles.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what about, I mean, we're kind of touching on this already. Well, certainly for me, I very much became aware of my pelvic floor after the baby was born. Yes. Not so much during pregnancy. I had other things to think about. But I definitely very much noticed I had a pelvic floor afterwards. Is there any kind of advice or anything? What are kind of the key things we need to keep in mind for this kind of postnatal period?
Yes. Okay. I could talk for hours. I'm going to try to keep it brief. So our pelvic floor, regardless of how we deliver that baby, whether it is a surgical birth or a C-section or whether it's a vaginal delivery, our pelvic floor has undergone a lot of change in a relatively short amount of time. So just very, very briefly, if you think about just the weight of a pregnancy, you know, as we are growing this child, there's an increased, you know, there's a giant stretch to the abdominal wall. I think it's like 200% of its length. A lot of times there's a natural separation that happens between the abdominal muscles, and there's a lot more stress on our pelvic floor muscles because our pelvic floor kind of is the bowl at the base of our pelvis. And so there's a lot more stress on that pelvic floor. And so for some women, they may even experience issues during a pregnancy. Like they might have a little bit of leaking or, you know, issues with constipation because there's so much more stress on the pelvic floor. And that's sort of normal, natural for anyone during a pregnancy. So there's a lot of stress on the pelvic floor, even just during a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So after a delivery, particularly depending on the circumstances of like if you had a vaginal birth, sometimes there may have been a little bit of trauma to the area. There may have been a little bit of tearing. There may have been an episiotomy that now you're having to heal from. There are just circumstances that sometimes there has been just an injury. And those muscles get incredibly stretched as well during a delivery. So those muscles stretch about twice their length also as we're delivering that baby. So there's been a lot of stress. Sometimes there's been some injury to that area. And it also can be normal for the first about 3 months postpartum to have some issues, to have a little bit of leaking or incontinence, or to have, you know, issues with being unable to pass gas. For a lot of women, that first, like, resuming sexual activity can be uncomfortable just because those muscles, sometimes there may be some scar tissue, or there may just be some overactivity after a delivery. I think an important thing to know as well, though, is those muscles. So for most people in the world, they should have access to a pelvic health physio or PT, or a pelvic health professional that has training in those muscles and how to help them rehab. Because it's common, there's a saying, it's common, not normal, to have issues after you have a baby. Mm-hmm. It's common to have leakage, especially with, you know, more challenging things like jumping, or, you know, if you get sick and are coughing a lot, it can be common, even if it's not normal, but there is someone that can help you retrain those muscles. Sometimes it's just a matter of working on that coordination. Sometimes if there was scar tissue, it's a matter of, you know, working on that scar tissue and trying to help retrain the muscles. Sometimes it's just you just need a little bit of guidance on how to get that area functioning a little bit better again.
Mm. And how does, because obviously you're not just a pregnancy and postnatal expert, but you also bring that topic of scoliosis, obviously, yes, into this. So, how does scoliosis have an effect, or where do you see kind of specific problems, maybe, or things that are different for those with scoliosis?
That is an excellent question. If we think about just when we have a scoliosis, I should have brought my spine model in. I did not. If you picture a scoliosis, a spine with scoliosis, where's my kid? There I am. It's got some rotation in it, right? There's like some twisting in it. And what happens is it's creating some torsion throughout the spine. And so what that normally will look like is the pelvic floor, which is made up of two sides, one side may be working a little bit harder than the other because there's either a shift of the pelvis, or there's like an obliquity, like there's a twist, so that those muscles aren't necessarily working symmetrically. And for the majority of people, you know, our bodies are very resilient and adaptable, and they may not have any issues with it until pregnancy or after a pregnancy, because there's been additional stress on those muscles. So you can find that sometimes that pelvic floor, it's not, the coordination is off, or those muscles working together, it's a little bit harder because there's been more stress to the pelvic floor. There may have been an injury to the pelvic floor. And also there's already a little bit of, you know, a change in work versus like one side versus the other. So it can be a little bit more common to have some issues with scoliosis. But again, I stand by the fact that even just knowing that there is like a pelvic health provider that can help you with that, you still can, even with scoliosis, even with a spinal fusion, you can start to work on those issues and you can resolve them with a little bit of help. So it's not like we have a little bit more of a prevalence of it, a little bit more of a risk of issues with the pelvic floor, particularly after delivery, but we can improve them with a little bit of help.
Mm. And is it, so I'm just thinking back again to the time when I was pregnant and had my babies, we were just basically told to do pelvic floor exercises. That's all really. And here's an app with a timer, and you should be doing this, I don't know, 3 times a day or whatever it was. Just do your pelvic floor exercises. I don't think that did anything for me.
No. So even in just regular traditional pelvic floor therapy, people without scoliosis, people are getting this advice still. And for the vast majority of people, just those straight like Kegels or pelvic floor exercises, they're not necessarily as effective, depending on several factors. If you've just had a baby and it's pure weakness, sure. But for a lot of us, it's, are we using the right muscles? Sometimes instead of using our pelvic floor, we're just clenching our glutes, or we're not using the correct muscles. Or it could be if those muscles are overactive, which is actually very common, just doing more of those exercises, it's actually just going to create more issue. Or overdoing those Kegels can cause issues like more urgency to go to the bathroom because we've started to overactivate those muscles. It can cause issues with being able to have a bowel movement because those, instead of being able to stretch to have that bowel movement, those muscles are working and clenched all the time. So I think it's more of what I would recommend is kind of getting in touch with your pelvic floor first and then knowing what your normal is. And if you don't, if your normal is not there anymore because you've had a baby, then knowing that there is something that you can do to help. I've created just a pelvic floor, like a pelvic floor assessment tool that people can do for themselves that just lives on my website. It does not replace like a professional evaluating you, but it does give you a bit of a baseline and gives you an understanding of what to expect. So I direct people to that all the time too, to just know that this is what the muscles should do. If your muscles are not doing that, or if you're not seeing this, it may be helpful to go see somebody with more background.
That's brilliant. So yes, so that would be in the description below as well, where you can find Laura's website, because I think, as I said in the beginning, I don't think this is just relevant for people who just had a baby. I think that it is kind of a longer term thing that it's just another thing that we have to that we have to maintain and look after, right?
Yeah. A lot of people too, I've found that some women, they have had babies and don't have any issues at all until maybe later in life, like post-menopause, when we see changes in estrogen and, you know, we get a little bit of loss of that pelvic floor control. And so women have gone most of their life without any issues and then start to notice some changes around menopause time. And that is very common. But again, there are some strategies and some, you know, some exercises and some tools that can be helpful for that. But so that someone could have had babies and not have any issues. And then years later, if they had some kind of scar tissue or something, that's when they can start to notice that that area is not as resilient anymore. And so that's when they notice those changes. So you're right. It's a lifelong thing. And those pelvic floor muscles are just like every other muscle in our body. They change with age. I learned a rather depressing statistic that our sphincters lose about 2% of their strength every year past like our mid-30s. So knowing that how to activate that pelvic floor and, you know, making sure we are prioritizing good bowel habits and all that can be helpful. And so even if you don't know what those are, there are ways to kind of get some training on that and know what your normal is. And that can also be a big help because we are all, you know, aging.
Yes. Yes. That is something that is for sure. Yeah. If we're lucky, right?
I know. Beats the alternative.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. I mean, I had a look at your website as well. I think there's so much great information, and you've got some masterclasses on there as well. And I think it's so important what you do. And I'm sure there's quite a few people watching here right now who would agree with me. Thank you. We need more of you.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a unicorn. There's a lot of people that do scoliosis exercise and not pelvic floor, and there's a lot of and vice versa. So,
yeah, absolutely, and just you know, be so kind of generous with that information as well, and giving us knowledge, right, and empowerment. I think that is so important because we can't change anything that we don't know, right?
Exactly.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Laura. What is kind of, if you had to narrow it down to like three things, your three kind of best tips for people who are maybe either thinking of getting pregnant or who just found out that they're pregnant, what would that be?
That is an excellent question. I think, first of all, one of the things that I have found important as I've worked with people is really kind of making sure that you are monitoring what you're intaking as far as pregnancy. I think a lot of times there is a lot of fear and anxiety surrounding just the unknown of pregnancy, plus having pregnancy with scoliosis or spinal fusion. I think it can be helpful to have a mantra to say something, and it might sound a little bit new age or woo-woo or whatever, but to have a mantra that, you know, my body is strong and stable and my body can do this. And my body is forming, you know, my baby the way it needs to. And like that can actually be really helpful. I try to create a lot of free content. I have some blogs. I'm planning on writing a few more surrounding kind of pregnancy and scoliosis. I have, like I said, a very long epidural blog because I know that's a very common question. So I went ahead and wrote out all the things in blog form. I have some masterclasses. One is a very just general, this is what happens in scoliosis. These are your pelvic floor muscles, giving you some baseline. I work with people virtually. I have a lot of people that will reach out and just have newly gotten pregnant and have a lot of fears and concerns. And I also do monthly pregnancy coaching where I'll work with women and they get a coaching call and access to all of my materials. But I think it's just overall knowing that even though you have scoliosis, even though you have spinal fusion, your body is able to have a pregnancy and is able to deliver a baby. And I think sometimes just knowing that and getting that body strong, you know, during the pregnancy, hopefully before the pregnancy, but working those muscles can really make a difference in how you feel during a pregnancy and how you're able to withstand the challenges of pregnancy and early postpartum, because it is a marathon.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It is.
It is.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you so much for your time, for chatting with us today.
Absolutely. It was fun. Thank you for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.